This is Infidel One. Offending Coyote Down. Offending Coyote Down.
Roger that.
Welcome to Trappin' Radio. We're proud, organic, free-range, wild fur farmers of North America.
Let me tell you a little story about how I was raised. Every day work, every day pray. God, family, friends, yeah, everybody sins. A winner never quits, and a quitter never wins. Help folks in need, don't fall for greed. A jealous man is weak, so think before you speak. If you love them, let them know. If you hate, let it go. Fast can be fun, but sometimes you need slow. God is all good, the devil is so real. So listen up, y'all, cause this is how I feel.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got none. Except for the good Lord up above. I answer to no one.
Now let's cover our sponsors. They do a lot to help support Trappin' Radio. So I'm asking you guys out there and gals to help support our sponsors as they keep Trappin' Radio on the air. First sponsors, Oki Cable and Trap Supply. Jeb's the owner of this. He's out of Oklahoma. Super guy. You'll not meet anybody nicer. It's somebody you're going to want to deal with. You can reach him at oktrapsupply.com. You can give Jeb a call at 918-429-4648. Not only does he do trap supply guys, he's a fur buyer, so if you're around the Oklahoma or surrounding states, give him a call with your fur. When you need stuff, give him a call and he'll get it out to you as soon as he can. Our second sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters Trading Post. Everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. Guys, if you're into trapping fur, hunting fur, chasing fur with dogs, you're not going to be able to think of hardly anything that you can't get from F&T. You can reach them at fntpost.com. You can also give them a call at 989-727-8727. Whatever you want, F&T's got it. Wildlife Control Supplies, proven solutions for wildlife control, delivering value, expertise, and products to the wildlife individual. If you're in the ADC business, control business, even fur trapping, you need to look at these guys' website. Top-notch company, have everything you would want, even the odd stuff that ADC guys are looking for. You can reach them at wildlifecontrolsupplies.com. You can give them a call at 877-684-7262. International number is 860-844-0101. If you're a wildlife control professional, you need to have Wildlife Control Supplies as one of your favorites on your computer or your phone, because when you come across something that you need specialized equipment, Alan will get it right out to you. Now let's go trapping.
See, I'm a flag flying, Bible toting son of a gun. Yeah, I'm hell on the heart, just a rebel on the run. Scared, don't know it, fear, don't feel it. The truth is the light, sometimes you gotta fight. Good beats bad, right beats wrong. I'm a barroom preacher and this is my song. I'm climbing for the top, representing for the country. I'm the people's champ, right out to dead camp. Shotgun toter, Republican voter. Hank Jr. supporter, let's protect our border. To hell with anyone who don't believe in the USA. Cause this is what I say.
I won't back up, I don't back down. I've been raised up to stand my ground. Take my job, but not my guns. Tax my check till I ain't got...
Hello everyone, this is Clint Locklear for Trapping Across America. I want to wish everybody a happy, happy Halloween. Don't know what that has to do with trapping, but I guess if you dress like a trapper, you go get some free candy. I'm not sure. Or you could dress like a trapper and maybe get a conversation started when somebody shows up, especially if you're in a rural area. If you do it in a city, you may get thought that you're like a crazy person anyway. So, but if you're in a rural area, dressed up in your waders, have some fur hanging around, whatever, you may start a conversation. I don't know. Just a thought off the top of my head. It sounds kind of stupid at the time as I'm saying it, but there you go. But it's Halloween today, and there's a lot of guys that have already started trapping. Our season here won't start till, I think, about three more weeks. Tennessee's got a weird thing. Some years we start around the second weekend and some the third. This one happens to fall on the third. And I can tell you right now, I'm looking forward. I'm not going to be traveling as much this winter because I want to actually become a muskrat hunter. That is my goal this year. I don't know from a profitable standpoint how well it's going to be. I'm still going to be trapping raccoons and beaver and otter and coyotes and cats and stuff like that. But I want to really look around and see, because I'm starting to see a few more muskrats pop up here and there. So if I'm just seeing a few, and I had a couple of fishermen tell me about it, how many are really around here, I won't know. It's not like I've got great big swamps or something with muskrat houses, so I'm going to have to go out and physically hunt for them, which is, you know, not the most simplest or easiest way, but I guarantee you, if when I go out and I do that, I'm going to learn something a lot about muskrats. And where are they at? You know, there's certain places that maybe I don't think they are that they are, and some places I think they are, they're not. And then how do I catch those rats? Because it's not going to be a big number, and I'm looking forward to it. It's something I haven't really done on that big a scale since I made the year-long Blitzkrieg video where I caught a bunch of them. And the rats where I caught those just aren't there in any amount of number, but I'm thinking they may be moving back into some of the smaller sloughs and creeks, and from a little bit of scouting, it seems to me that they are. Now, the problem I've got here is water fluctuation, so that's going to be an interesting thing to deal with, but that's what trapping is. It's always an interesting situation. Now, I want to cover several different topics tonight. Some are questions, some are thoughts. Some are some new products I've got coming out that I think is going to definitely help some trappers that definitely save some money. And on a year like this, especially when we talk about the Coon Whisperer, I think it's going to be pretty advantageous to guys that are still going to be pounding a lot of DP traps. Before I get into that, y'all all see my t-shirt, and you see it on my logo, and you see it on my websites and stuff like that. You know, I don't know if I should start just doing a talking to the younger trapper segment every week or not. But, you know, my company motto has been for years, failure is not an option. And as I thought about that over the course of years, it's became clear to me, because I see people that are using that in ways that I did not intend. Let me explain what failure is not an option. If you don't know what that is, when I was in the military, you know, jumping out of airplanes and chasing people around and stuff like that, failure is not an option because a mission, you're not allowed to fail at a mission. And that mindset, no matter if you want to believe in that concept or not, it kind of sticks with you. Now, when I got out and I was doing ADC work and I was really promoting Predator Control Group, for failure is not an option, that is what that logo was more intended for. And there's a huge difference between that and fur trapping, and there's a huge difference between that and someone that's just getting into trapping. Because I'm going to say something that may shock some people here in a minute, but when I meant failure is not an option, when I went to a control job, failure was not an option. Because that person was paying me a lot of money to catch predators. If I had to set 700 traps on 1,000 acres, I would set 700,000 acres. Failure was not an option. If I had to run snares and traps and blind sets, failure was not an option. I've got night vision scoped where I would stay up all night and shoot stuff. Failure is not an option. I've tried running bobcats and coyotes on over with the Jeep. Failure is not an option. You know, to me, no matter what it took for that client, I've even had jobs, guys, where I got my butt kicked so bad that I've stayed extra time for free because failure was not an option. that was a service that I was doing for pay for a client. And the reputation of that being what it is today is because of that mindset and all that up there. Easy, wasn't easy, or common sense, or whatever you want to call it, are completely irrelevant. Failure was not an option, was a mindset for a control company that was doing something that not a lot of companies were doing. So that's what that means. Now I'm going to talk to all trappers, but especially younger trappers, in the ego, testosterone filled world of trapping. Failure is an option. Failure is something that you should not be worried about or scared about, or more than that, failure is an option and you should not be embarrassed by it. And I know in America, we have always, you set your mind to anything and you can do it. And if you want it bad enough, you work hard enough and you do all that. All that's great. You know, it's great bumper stickers and this, that, and the other. But I can tell you right now, failure is an option. How many times did it take to figure out how to make a light bulb? The end result was something we all use today. But the failure to figure that out was a long, long process. Most billionaires and multimillionaires that most of us know the names of today, if you do research on those people, most of them have been bankrupt an average of 3.2 times. Failure for them was definitely an option. The end result is what they were looking for. So the reason I want to bring this out, because I see it all over the internet. How many did you catch today? How come that's all you caught? Yada, yada, yada. I'm a better trapper because I caught more fur. Yada, yada, yada. All that. Testosterone's just leaking from the keyboards. Now, if you're new to trapping or you're trying to figure out a new animal, failure is not an option. It's a very destructive way to think about your trapping. Because it's very simple. You don't know through experience yet how to trap the animals in your environment yet. You can read all you want to on the internet. You can read all the books you want. You can watch all the videos. You can vapor lock on information. But just because you have that information does not mean it's knowledge, and it does not translate into skill. You do not have muscle memory from setting traps in dirt holes and seeing or thinking you see how an animal's going to work a set, different things like that. You've got to fail a lot before you're any good at trapping. Failure is part of trapping if you're going to be any good. Now, if you're going to go out and set one trap on the most smoking hot coon trail in Iowa the opening day, and you're going to pull that set after you catch that first coon that first night, then you can say failure is not an option. And I'm gonna use some numbers here where some of the people may be surprised a little bit about how failure is success. When I did 1,104 beaver in a year, that averaged a 3.3 beaver over that course of that year. I didn't trap for a full year, but we're gonna keep those numbers just so they're simple. Now, do you think I just had 3.3 sets out to catch a 1,104 beaver? No. I had days of having out 60 and 80 beaver sets just for beaver for control. So if I'm catching 3.3 a day, I'm making a living from it. I've got all kind of fur to sell from it. My dog's eating the meat. I'm eating the meat. Other friends of mine, dogs are eating the meat. Very successful. All that caster for a lure maker, very successful. But if I'm running 65 traps, that mean I failed, 61 or 62 times a day if I was running 60 traps? So I failed at 61 of those sets or 62 of those sets to make that average to catch 1,104 beaver in a year. And on the years I was only catching 600, 700, or 800 beaver, it was even worse. If you want to look at it from failure is not an option. Now, most people know, especially if you're older, who Jim Spencer is. He's kind of like the Southeastern mink guy. He'd catch a couple hundred mink in a year, or at least 100 mink in a year. But what was interesting, when if you ever talk to Jim, he's running about 200 sets a day. He's catching about 10. That's 190 failures a day. At the end result, though, it looks really cool. Now, why am I telling you this? Why am I saying failure is an option if you're just getting in started trapping? Because failure is something that's just natural in the process of learning. And if you're not failing, I guarantee you, you ain't doing nothing. You're not extending yourself, and you're sure not learning anything. Failure is something that from a strictly realistic point of view, is something you need to be almost looking for. Most failure, when someone says failure is not an option, I can tell you, they're talking about you didn't try hard, or you didn't think, or you were lazy, or you're a dumb butt, or you're something like that. That's not the failure I'm talking about. When I learned what I learned about Beaver, and I was doing this control contract with a county down here, I did that for 4 years. Now, after the first year, you know, you get kind of bored. And I don't care what anybody says. You get kind of bored just hammering on Beaver day in and day out and day in. Every now and then you get excited because you come up to the perfect set with a perfect water level and you know you're going to slam Beaver. But, I mean, good grief. Do you really think that Beaver number 420 is that much more exciting than Beaver 1101? After a while, it's just a Beaver. Now, I could have just kept doing what I was doing, and unfortunately, that's the way most trappers go about their trapping career. They do what they do, and they shut off the most important computer in the world, which is the gray matter between your ears and hold your head up, and they don't think about how can I use this to figure something out that's going to greatly help me somewhere down the road. Now, I went out every month after about the second year of doing this, and I went out with the purpose of failing. And I failed every day. Now, normally towards the end of a 30 or 60 day cycle that was planned on my part to be a failure, I started figuring stuff out, and then I could go on to something else. Now, what I mean by that, go out with Beaver and only set snares for a month or 60 days. There ain't a foothold in the trap, there's not a body grip in the trap. No matter what the situation is, you got to figure out how to snare that Beaver. If it's swimming underwater, try snaring Beaver underwater. It ain't quite as simple as they show it on the internet, I promise you that. Or on top of the water. Or on big water. Or how about with fast current? Try snaring a bunch of Beaver where you can't hardly stand up in the water. And they're not coming up to the banks. You get very creative. You try some of the most goofy ass looking stuff you've ever seen, and most of it does not work. But you keep trying long enough, I promise you'll learn something. All the failure, what didn't work? I have yet to come across a situation I can't snare a Beaver. No matter what's going on, short of just a massive 12-foot rise and a flood. And then in 2 days, I can go snare a Beaver again. Now, how about, think about it this way. One of the things I did after reading something from, it was one of Johnny Thorpe's, I don't know if it was his book or one of his videos or talking to him at a convention or something, because it was before I went up and took instruction with him. He talked about trapping Beaver with number two coil springs on dry land. Well, I'm a big trap guy. Everybody knows that. You know, you're not going to be getting a lot of back feet in a number two bridger is what I was using when I was doing this. I went out for 30 days with nothing but 175s and number two traps. There was no snares in the truck. There was no body grips in the truck. There was no CDRs or number five bridgers at that time. We didn't have TS85s and things. None of that was in the truck. They were Some short chain, some got 4 or 5 foot of chain, disposable stakes. That was the only thing that I went out and beaver trapped with. Now, if you don't think that I had failure on a daily basis, oh, you're kidding yourself. I saw snap trap after snap trap. I was starting to think Johnny Thorpe was making it up out of midair. But as I kept watching, learning, observing, adjusting, trying different slopes, digging in the bank a certain way, running two traps, front and back, sideways, 45s, 90s, it didn't make any difference trying to figure this out. You know, eventually, by the end, and that one took me about 60 days, you know, by the end of the 60 days, I feel confident that I can take a number two beaver trap out and catch beaver all day long with it. Now, is it as easy and as fast as using a big trap? No. But I learned a tremendous amount. And if you don't think catching one in a number two on a continuous basis, then you go to a big trap. Oh, the big trap's just like nothing. It's super, super simple. So failing is not a problem. You know, you go out and you see it on Facebook all the time. You know, I want to catch 20 coyotes. How many traps do I need? Oh my goodness. How in the world is somebody supposed to know that? I mean, someone that's been trapping for 40 years and catches 500 coyotes a year, or is that someone that just started trapping, or is that someone that's got good land or bad land? I mean, there's no way to know on a question like that. But I can tell you that person is looking at something from a form of a formulaic way of trapping. Okay, if I'm going to catch 10 coyotes a day, I need to set 75 traps to do that. Well, that ain't going to work. And someone that thinks that way does not have the real world experience yet to understand enough to even get those type of numbers anyway out of 75 traps. There's a lot of failure that's going to happen before it works. You know, I've talked to a lot of people about coyote trapping. You know, some of them catch them right off the bat, then they go through a big dry spell, or they have a hard time sometimes for a year or two before they actually catch a couple of them, and this, that, and the other. And it's kind of a joke in trapping. Hey, man, you know, first 100 coyotes are the hardest. After that, they get a lot easier. Same thing with skinning a beaver. I'd much rather skin a beaver than I would a raccoon. Why? I've done thousands and thousands of them. I can skin a beaver and watch my DVD player as Braveheart is going across the battlefield. I don't have to hardly even look anymore. You know, someone at a demo watches me skin a beaver in 3 minutes and 15 seconds, and I'm talking through it. That's because I've done it. You know, the first 1,000 beaver weren't quite like that. And the first 1,000 beaver had a whole lot of holes in it and a whole lot of things just not going right till I figured out this system through failure that I use on skinning beaver. Failure's not bad. Failure's what you learn. If someone's been trapping for just a couple of weeks and they're worried about not failing because of the egotistical way that trappers are just made, you're not going to ever try something new because that's going to mess up your catch percentage. Who cares? You may find out a better way to do something. You don't know if you don't try it, and if you're not willing to fail, you're not going to try it. It's up to you to be willing to fail, even though that seems like the most un-American thing to say around a bunch of guys. If you're going to be any good at this game for any amount of time, you've got to think, you've got to observe, you've got to put two and two together where it equals four, not seven, and you've got to sit there and work yourself, your brain through this process of why is this working or why is that not working, or what if I try this or how if I adjust this this way. That's how you become a good trapper, is through failure. And the only reason I want to bring that up is I do not want people to get discouraged, because trapping is not as easy, especially when it comes to numbers, as most people that's never caught those numbers understand. Anybody can go catch a muskrat. How many people do you know it catches 1,000? Most guys can go catch 10 or 15 coyotes in a year. How many people do you know that catch 500? Bobcats are easy. Most people catch them by accident. How many people do you know catch 100 to 200 of them? See what I'm saying? the people that have got these numbers behind them, I guarantee you there is a ton of failure. Because if they were doing what everybody else was doing and thinking in the same way that everybody else is thinking about their trapping, they would still be in the same numbers of everybody else. And there's a lot of guys, especially older guys, that run out with a quarter of the traps of the younger trappers and catch more animals. There is a lot of failure in stories behind being able to do that. You've got to accept the failure to be able to get any better. And our society does not like that. They think because if you're just going to man up and cowboy up hard enough that you can overcome not knowing what you're doing. It ain't like it's a marathon race where you're just physically moving something. You've got a whole nother element, which is the animal, to think about. So as you're going out, and you may think that, you know, especially if you're new, I mean, it's so common. You get all excited all summer and fall long. You're posting on Facebook, you're reading the forums, you've ordered videos, you've got books, you're burning up YouTube, and you think that you know how to do this, and then you go out and you put this, you know, you plan this lined out and you got all your traps, you know, you've petted them for the last 3 weeks and they know that you love them. And then you go out and you put these perfect sets in on where you think, and you go out and you catch, and you make catch one or two, three, four animals. And it can be heartbreaking. I mean, I did that when I got back to Alaska. I mean, good grief. How hard is it to go catch raccoon? Well, it's not hard if you know what you're doing, where they're at, and the time of year, and everything else that's got to be involved with that. But just jumping out there and think you're going to catch 50 a night because you know five guys has been doing it for 30 years has been catching 50 a night, it's heartbreaking. And then you start just scrambling around trying to figure all this other stuff out. That's where you learn. Because, you know, it's a quote from Mike Tyson. I mean, it's kind of funny if you hear it in his voice, but it's still a quote from Mike Tyson. Everybody has a plan till they get hit in the face. And I promise you, when you go trapping, you're going to get hit in the face repeatedly. Weather's going to work on you. Competition's going to work on you. Laws are going to work on you. Flooding's going to work on you. Frozen ground's going to work on you. The animal population's going to work on you. The food sources are going to change, and that's going to work on you. Someone else may have already educated some animals. That's going to work on you, on and on and on. So failure, guys, is not a problem as long as you're learning from it. Now, where the problem with failure is, if you're dogmented in your way of thinking and you automatically think, no matter what, I'm right on this, even when it doesn't work out and even when you're failing, if you keep running your head into that wall, that's when failure's a problem. Because that's failure stupidity is what that is. If pockets aren't working for coon, and you put them everywhere, and you've tried every magical bait and lure that there is, and they're not working, and you keep cutting in pockets because that's what you believe you've got to do to catch coon, and you keep doing it and doing it and doing it, and somebody out there are shaking your head because you know what I'm telling you is the truth, and it doesn't work. Well, maybe it's move his pocket up on the bank. Maybe the coon don't want to get in the water here. Maybe the coon aren't at the water at this time of year. Maybe I need to go look for trails or different food sources. Are the acorns on heavy? Are the big boars up in the mountains gorging on acorns? You gotta think. So if you're failing and you're not changing, problem. Failing and learning, no problem whatsoever. As long as you physically and mentally use that failure as a way to get ahead. So I want you to think about it, because I know there's a lot of new guys that are going out with high expectations. And they're dreaming about this truck full of fur when they really don't have the failures to give them the education yet to be able to do that. And they're going to be disappointed and heartbroken. And I don't want that to happen. Trapping should be fun. Trapping should be exciting, and trapping should be very educational. But that education is not a short-term thing for right now. It doesn't work out that way. Every year, you should be thinking about, what can I do this year to be a better trapper 5 years from now? next year, next month, at a different place, different things like that. That's how you become a good trapper. And that's when trapping gets a whole lot more enjoyable, because all of a sudden, the trapper that thinks that way, oh, he's gifted. He's lucky. If I just lived where he lived, if I just had the animals that he had, all of the things that you always hear people say about somebody that catches a lot of fur, you start understanding that most of those things don't have anything to do with it. It's all the failures up to that point that made that trapper the way he is. So I want you to think about that when things don't go your way. It's not as crazy as you think to say failure is okay, because when you're learning, that's the only thing that matters. Now, I want to talk about a business idea for y'all. And this is not going to be a business idea for everybody. This is not going to be a business idea that a majority of trappers are going to be able to latch onto. I promise you that. It's not going to work for a lot of people. You're going to want it to, and you're going to see what I'm getting ready to tell you as being very profitable, and it's something that you've got access to things to do. But what I'm getting ready to tell you is going to take somebody that's going to have to get out of a backwoods, country thinking, animal killing type person. You may have to be that way to get the product, but then you may have to find somebody else to do your marketing, because you may just not work out in the marketplace that I'm talking about. And I've been thinking about this a lot. With my lure business, the way that it's growing, I'm not interested in doing this whatsoever. Maybe someday I may try to pull it off. I have no doubt in my mind that if I wanted to do this, and I live in Dunlap, I can be at the Chattanooga Farmers Market on within probably an hour and 20 minutes. Then I can pull this off. So what is this great idea of mine? For some of you, if you pay attention to it, it's going to make you a ton of money if you think about it in a way where you're not thinking of it as a trapper, but as a soccer mom. So what are we talking about? Dun, dun, dun! Pet food. Now before you just kind of roll your eyes back in your head and think of how boring this is, we're talking about making money for a trapper with something he's doing that takes him out of the commodity side of fur. Hopefully, to the right people that hear this, they pay attention. Everybody that watches TV, and if you don't watch TV, just go over to a friend's house and watch TV for a weekend and get bored or whatever, and watch how many pet food commercials are now wheat-free, corn-free, soy-free, gluten-free, all-natural, this, that, and the other. But when we get into the marketing side of this thing very quickly, all-natural and advertising on the TV is something that we can exploit as trappers for building a market that is local. I'm not sure that this is scalable where you're going to be Purina dog food for the masses. But what I am talking about, it's probably a $50,000 to $100,000 to $150,000 business with very little cost. So just think about it. Now you're going to get paid to go trap and make $100,000 with some added work on the backside to sell something that you throw away for the pretty much right now, and you can still sell the fur. And just imagine if you're getting paid doing predator work, and you write some articles, and you maybe make a DVD. And everything else. Just imagine, and that's not in the business plan I was talking about. I'm talking about stacking functions of a business for a trapper. Now, pet food, you watch it all day long. People now will feed their kids soy, corn, gluten, everything that they don't want to feed their blessed pet. Now, to me and you, that may sound ridiculous. The market, which is pretty much wealthy and nice soccer moms and even non-soccer moms that think their pets are more valuable a lot of times than their kids, they're willing to pay for a premium because it makes them feel good to give them something that is all natural. Now, you tell me something. What is more all natural for a pet than beaver, nutria, bobcat, muskrat, some organic rice, which we'll get into that in a minute. Someone cooks it up and basically just boiling it in a pot, puts it in a container where it looks like a 6-ounce jar or an 8-ounce jar that you would sell to another trapper with a very nice looking logo on it with free range and everything else. Because what we're talking about doing is offering a pet food that is from a recycled product that needs to be marketed from an aspect of these animals were trapped through damage and they have to be taken care of, and we want to do our part in the recycling world, so we want to recycle this into the most nutritious pet food homeowners that actually love their pets can ever get. So you've got the meats in there, and you'll need to have rice in there. And the reason I'm saying the rice, one, it's a bulk for you, and two, as long as you're not greedy about it and you don't overdo the rice, it is the same formula pretty much that when you find sled dogs, which are the best fed dogs in the world, it's usually salmon and beaver or something like that in rice. So it's a very simple thing to do. Now, what would you as a trapper do? Well, you may not be able to supply all of your market once you get it established from your own trapping. So you may have to buy carcasses from other trappers. $2 or $3 will get it all day long. No problem whatsoever. You can also work out deals with fur buyers that buy in the round, because they're looking for a way. You know, you don't want to be sticking coyotes and fox and raccoons and stuff like that that dogs are not going to want to eat, because if you get greedy about it, I promise you, you're going to fail at this. Do it right from the beginning. Now, I'm going to run some numbers through with you, and I wish I had my real calculator, but I'm going to use my phone. But I just want to go over this about how profitable this could be. So we're going to say we're going to put stuff in a 6-ounce serving size, which most dogs that get this are going to be little punt dogs, you know, little frou-frou mops and fifis and poodles and chihuahuas and yada yada yada. So we're going to say 6 ounces. You pull 15 or even 10 pounds of meat off of a beaver. Now, that beaver you just sold at this market price can be anywhere from $12 to probably $18. So that's what the fur value of this is. But we're not talking about the fur value. This is a value-added product, which businesses do all the time. There's nothing very unique about this. But for a trapper, that's where this is different. This is getting a trapper out of the commodity, please give me something mindset. So we get 10 pounds of meat. Okay, we're going to run through this. 10 times 16, is that's how many ounces are in a pound. That equals 160 ounces divided by 6 equals 26 6-ounce jars just meat. But that's not going to be true, and it's going to depend on how you formulate your rice, which doesn't probably, in my opinion, need to be more than 20%. Or the people's going to think you're trying to jip them, and you're going to lose customers. Don't get cheap. Don't try to cut. Don't try to get over. Don't try to be smarter than. Have a better product than your customers want, and they'll come back to you. So that's 26 of these. Now, we're looking at beaver as a trapper from the fur value of it, and maybe the caster. And maybe we sell a tail every now and then and a skull to a school and stuff like that. But our beaver has got 26.6 of these jars. We're going to take that 6 off just to make the math, because you got a little bit of spillage or whatever. Now, when you look at what good dog food costs, you could easily get $3.50 for this recycled pure organic or beyond organic, because you can't say organic unless you're going to get certified, and that ain't going to happen. Free range, healthy, no antibiotics, no hormones, no wheat, no gluten, no yada, 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 all that stuff that you'll have this big marketing spiel that will just make a homeowner with a little punt dog ooey and gooey in her seat because she's so excited that you're going to allow her dog to be so happy. So we're going to say, let's just say $350. We're going to sell each one of these at $350. Times $3.50 equals $93.33. Your beaver is worth, let me say it very quietly, $93. No reason for a trapper to be poor. There's a market that is telling you that they want to give you $93 for your beaver meat that you're throwing away. Now, you can still sell the hide, so you got $100 a beaver. If you can't make money off $100 a beaver, dude, you're in the wrong game. So it's $93 a beaver, but it's not a true $93 a beaver, and I'm going to tell you why. Because out of that 26, so it's 26. We're going to have, say, 75 cents in the jar and label times 0.75 equals $19.50. Okay, we're going to subtract that. So our profit just went down, which is fine. Minus 19.50 equals our beaver's now worth $73.83. One beaver, guys, and now we've got the cost of our bottles and stuff in there. Now, this is going to be a little bit higher because you are probably going to have 20% of organic. Use organic, because if you put organic rice on the label and someone tests it and they sue your butt out of existence, you deserve it. Don't lie to your customers. So you got $73.83 in the meat of this beaver. To put that in there, that's your label. If you get really, really creative with a label, you may knock this price down to $70 worth of that beaver. Nicer it looks, the more it's going to sell. This is not a trapping convention or a flea market for the market that I'm talking about going over. Now, how many beaver can someone catch in a year working really hard? Even if you go out of state and places like that, an average trapper with a couple of years' experience can go to some different places if you don't have any area and catch 300 of these things. 300 beaver. So, say 73 times 300 equals, that's $21,000 of beaver off catching 300 beaver, plus the fur, plus the caster, and however else you come up to make more money. Now, bobcats are the same way. Now, you can add, in my opinion, and you can do whatever you want if you decide to do this, because it's my business. I mean, it's your business. But I would do bobcat, muskrats, nutria. And if someone's in Louisiana, or you know someone in Louisiana, or you can get a refrigerated truck to go get carcasses down there, you get them all day long, you could get hundreds of thousands of pounds of nutria. Dogs love them. Cats love them. Everything else. So just off 300 beaver, we're making $21,000 for a single guy to market his byproduct to somebody else. Now, you can scale this up to a certain point. Now, here's where greed from business people always get them in trouble. Well, I want to get them in a grocery store. No, you don't. No, you don't. No, you don't. You want to, on a business like this, to be the guy. Or you have your wife be the guy. Or the hippie girl down the street be the girl. And the reason I'm saying that, and please listen to me and don't get upset, most people at a farmer's market, if a trapper acts like a trapper, dresses like a trapper, uses vernacular like a trapper, talks about killing, yada, 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 you are not going to have soccer moms buy your stuff. So if you're a big, grizzly, bearded up guy like me, and you sound country and this, that, and the other, you're going to lose market share right off the bat. Right, wrong, otherwise is irrelevant. Your customer is not going to like or respond to someone that acts, thinks, and talks like a trapper. So you may have to use your wife or girlfriend or a friend or the hippie girl down the road. Because if you talk to a hippie down the road and she could make, you know, a couple hundred dollars a day by going to a market and talking about how good this food is, because it is. And when that homeowner actually gives their little foo-foo real food, which beaver, nutria, bobcat, and muskrat are, and that dog within 2 days acts like a totally different dog, and his eyes are clear, his hair feels better, and he's running around like he's 10 years younger, you're going to have a customer now that's going to have you so much business that you're not going to know what to do with. But you need to keep this scalable to your business, in my opinion. You can try it a different way. If you want to think big and go with it, knock yourself out, I think you're going to hurt yourself. There's not going to be, if you sell these things in a grocery store, you're maybe going to get you're going to make 50 cents per bottle. That is not the way that I think you should be making money. Getting stuff in stores is the way that your grandparents used to make money. We're in 2014, so you got to start thinking that way. So if I wanted to do this model, I'm going to tell you how I would do it. You don't have to do it my way. You can be hard-headed about this if you want to. You can come up with a better way if you want to, and God bless you if you do. If I was going to do this model, the first year you're not going to have massive sales. It's going to be a new thing, and it's going to depend on your marketing ability of how this stuff moves right at the beginning. But if it was me, Chattanooga, like I said, is I can be at their farmer market in an hour and 20 minutes. This winter, I would target something I may not be targeting this winter. I would find out my other buddies that are trapping beaver and buy their carcasses for a couple of dollars a piece. They'll be glad to drop them off. They don't have to dispose of them, this, that, and the other. So now I'm going to have this meat here, and I'm going to cut it off the bone, and I'm going to grind it. If you don't have a grinder, you can get a good grinder for about $500 from Cabela's or Bass Pro. That's going to take you 5 beavers to make that up. So it's not expensive. Expensive is a human concept of what something costs over the value of it. And $500 for a grinder that you can make $21,000 off of, 300 beaver, is not expensive. It's dirt cheap. Don't think like a trapper. Think like a business owner if you're going to think about doing this. So you're going to grind the meat up. You're going to look around online and health food stores. Where can I get 50 pounds of organic rice that is certified, that I can get a letter from the place that it comes from, that it is certified, that I can keep on record? It's going to probably cost you 3 times what regular rice is. Rice is pretty much cheaper than dirt, so you ain't got much to worry about. You're not going to have much money in it. Plus, you're going to make money on that anyway, so it doesn't cost you anything. It makes you money. So we got our rice, and we've got our meat. We've got a bullet. We got to have something, 30-gallon drum that had glycerin in it or something like that, a great big pot. You can get creative. It's irrelevant. You know, you can mix up 30 gallons of this stuff with a good grinder in no time. You can mix the rice with it, put it in the meat as you put it in the water, let it boil till the pink's gone out of it because you don't want it bleeding out in the jar. Let it cool off. Have some big type of colander type thing that you scoop it in, that all the excess moisture goes down through. Because we're selling a healthy product, we're not going to preserve it, so you're not going to have the cost of that. You're going to have freezers. If you don't have freezers, you're going to have to buy some freezers. Still, it's going to be dirt cheap when you look at the big picture. Start with one. Don't go buy 10 till you need 10. Fill that freezer full up with your dog food, with your labels on it and everything like that. Make sure it stays super clean. You don't have chunks and stuff hanging off the bottles like we see in a lot of trapping conventions. You don't have the labels crooked. You don't have the labels looking this, that, and the other. It looks like something you went down to PetSmart and bought. You put it in boxes. You put it in that freezer. Or you figure out a shelving system in that freezer and you put them in there. Now, when market comes, you're going to either have you or your representative of your company that's going to have to be able to explain and have a very coherent way of explaining where this meat is coming from and what it is. First off, you're going to have to check your your state, because you may have to get a permit or a license of some kind to sell wild meat, and you may have to go through a headache to get that worked out. Some states this may just not flat out work. Some states, like Louisiana, which is a free state in America, this probably would not be an issue whatsoever. But you're going to have to make sure what you're doing is legal, or make it legal. One of the two. Or find a loophole around it where it can be somewhat legal. Does it need to be inspected by somebody before you do it? I don't know. That's something you're going to have to figure out on your own. It's probably not. You know, it may be. Heck, I don't know. You may even want to go as far as to send some of this out to prominent people in an area that you know that do blogs and write for the newspaper and things like that, that have pets, that you're going to give them this product and send them a case of it for free. It ain't going to really cost you any money, but you do something like that. So you're going to go to the farmer's market or some market like that, or you're going to go to specialty pet shops, not Walmart, and you're going to talk to them. If you're going to talk to a shop, they're going to want to get their cut, and it's not going to make you happy. But if you're scared of a farmer's market, you may be able to go about it that way. But you're not going to make as much money as you can. But if you go to the farmer's market and you set up a table and you have a nice tablecloth and you have some pictures that you can pull off the internet of horses and all this crap and big chicken blood baths and all that that most dog food is made out of, and talk about GMOs being in there and what that does to animals and their liver and the reproductive systems. You can have all this in a very professional looking manner, so when someone comes up and asks you about it on a simple 11 by 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper that looks good, you can hand them to it and say, "Now, this is what we've got. If you have questions, you can call me at this number. We have a website set up explaining exactly what we have." And then you go into your spiel of why it is the most nutritious, dense, free-range, recycled, everything that you can come up with where it doesn't sound too much like a car salesman to that customer, where you're somewhere in there, you're going to hit a trigger with them. Now, the first couple times you go to a farmer's market, you're probably not going to sell that many, but you'll sell a few. And like I said, when a dog goes off of Purina and you put him on Beaver or Nutria or something like that, there's going to be a visible difference in that dog. When I start trapping Beaver and my dog starts eating Beaver, it's a different dog than it was 3 days before. Ask anybody that's fed their dog that. It's natural to them, and it makes them healthy fast. So when they see that, they're going to come back. And you want to have the price of your dog food to be probably 10 to 15% more than the high-end dog food that they can buy at PetSmart, because yours is better. They can buy it from you. They can buy it from the guy that's actually putting it together. All this is marketable. Now see, to me, you, and a trapper, it's too expensive to give a dog. Well, you're not, a trapper's not your customer. Old farmer down the road, he's not your customer. Your customer is the soccer moms that's got the little 4x4 foot raised bed in their yard and grow 2 tomatoes, and they think they're saving the world, and their pet is the same as a child. That's your customer. Rational in their decisions with that pet are nowhere on the same page. All you're doing is supplying a niche to that person that thinks that dog or that cat is as important as a person. Now, a cat is not going to eat 6 ounces of this, probably. You may have to come up with a variety that's in a smaller can to feed the animal. But the animal's not going to get fat on this, and that's something that you can definitely explain to the person, because it's more nutritious and it's nutritious dense. I'm hoping that somebody out there that's listening to this can see the value of this. $73 Beaver. Has nothing to do with the fur, has nothing to do with the castor. Now the fur and the caster, just like an ADC trapper, is bonus. Now let's say you get, let's play with some numbers, and you may be thinking, because most people are so warped by the globalization and everything of business that they don't understand how niche marketing works. So it's going to be the last thing, and I'm not going to answer a bunch of questions about this, guys, on the internet and stuff like that, because that is a wide open topic. This is going to be up to you to do the research and do it yourself if you want to do it. To the right guy, it's going to be a lot of money. So how many customers do we need to make a good amount of money? There's 365 days in a year. That dog is going to eat 365 days. So one customer is worth to you, let's say you sell them for $350 a piece, 3.5 times 365 equals $1,200.77.50 per customer for them to feed you your dog. If you do a good job on making this and it's clean and the bottle looks good and their dog reacts, they're spending somewhere around that anyway, because if you go to a specialty pet food store right now, you'll see there's pet food that's not preserved that's in the refrigerator to give their pets. I don't think that's a good idea. So you can give someone a case or two cases of cat or dog food in a box frozen from your freezer. They take it home, put it in their freezer, and the day before they just set it out on the counter and they plop it in the bowl the next day, and they don't have to worry about expiration dates and different things like that. So one customer is $1,277. Let's say we want to have a $50,000 business. $50,000 divided by 39.15 customers. 39. Not 390, not 3,090, not 300,000, not 3 million. 39 customers to buy your dog food or cat food for their pet makes you $50,000. Now we're talking about changing trapping for some people that's got the gumption to try this and goes through the failures of figuring out how to get this to work. Now, you're making some serious money, and maybe the job that you really don't like and you really don't care for is not that important to you anymore, because the $50,000 has nothing to do with the fur that you're catching in another way. And this can all be done for 39 customers. You could probably knock that out in 14 days and be done with it, and that's $40,000. Well, let's just crank that up. So what if we actually get 300? I mean, imagine that, out of a city of Chattanooga, if I can't find 300 pet crazy people, which I could do in a day, but I get 300 buying my product and they love it. What does that mean to me? 300 customers. That's it. And that's not hard to do at a decent sized farmer's market. Times 1277 equals $383,100 bill. $300,000 plus for a business to have 300 customers buy your food that you've done right, that you take pride in, and you're making that customer so happy they can't stand it. And there's no money in trapping. Maybe there's no creativity in trapping is the reason there's no money in trapping. Now, will there be laws and stuff to figure out? Absolutely. Any $300,000 business has got to figure that out. Is it daunting? You better believe it. If it ain't worth your time to have a $300,000 business, then you ain't worth the $300,000 it would take to fulfill that anyway. Now let's just get super crazy and say we have 1,000 customers. Say over 10 years, you build up to 1,000 customers. That's $1,277,000 business. to supply the dog food and cat food for $1,000 for 1,000 customers. I hope I've got your attention. If you just think that it ain't worth your time, I'll give you my address and you can just send me a few of these $1 million checks. That is a business model based off of trapping, based off a market that is screaming for it right now. And I guarantee you, these people's kids will have less nutrition food before their pets do. That's the world we live in. They already are. I mean, it tickles me to death. I see these shows and they're looking at the back of a cat fed. And you can tell there's kids in the house, and they're like, I can't believe we're feeding our pets this corn and gluten, wheat, and yada, yada, yada. And you know dang well they just fed their kids macaroni and cheese and, you know, and a hamburger, which is everything that they won't feed their pet. You're talking with the same logical thing here of somebody that's absolutely crazy about their pets and they'll do anything for them. And, you know, and at the same time, I buy my chickens watermelon. They ain't got to have watermelon. It makes me happy to make them happy. Or squash or pumpkins or when I'm doing my mulch around here and I come across these great big grubs, I throw them in a bucket and watch them just tear them to pieces. They're happy. It makes me happy. That's the same thing you're doing with these landowners. I mean, not landowners, but pet owners. So that's a business model. Didn't cost you a dime. It's going to be up to you to work through all the logistics of it. Test it out on some friends. Build a market slowly. I mean, 39 is 50 grand. All you need is 39 people don't have their pets. 50 grand. I mean, good grief, guys. Ain't no money in trapping, please. You just got to be creative. You got to find markets for these things, different things like that. Just a thought, throwing it out there. It's up to you to figure it out if you want to do it or if you don't. Because you're either a grown man about this or you're not, or you're going to keep doing what you're doing, or you're going to figure out something else. And maybe this will trigger another idea that I haven't thought about. I don't know. There's probably better ways to make money at trapping than this. At that kind of money, even though I was thinking maybe I'm not interested because I haven't run the numbers through to 1,000 customers, I may be looking at starting this in Chattanooga. But here's the deal. Chattanooga, and I'm just talking Nashville, Chattanooga, Franklin, Tennessee, which has got money running out of its ears with all the movie stars and the country singers up there. Nashville, Memphis, Knoxville, Bristol. There could be 30 guys in my state doing $1 million business, supplying a niche market. And think about that all over the country. You get in somewhere like Atlanta, dude, you ain't going to supply Atlanta. It could be 20 trappers doing the same thing in Atlanta. You ain't going to hurt that. Chicago, you live in Illinois, and you don't think this is a business model for Chicago? I mean, those dogs dress with more expensive clothes than we do. New York, you live in New York City? I mean, not New York, but if you're within 2 hours in New York City and you don't think $1 million business is worth your time. Now, will you have people that will be turned off because these are trapped animals? That is where you're going to have to creatively go into the recycling part that these animals are taking anyway because of damage. And instead of throwing them away, this is the natural food that a dog would eat or a cat would eat. They love it. Nutrition dense. I'm going to stop right here because I get excited about things like this because they are real. The problem is most people will hear it, go, yeah, that sounds good, but I'm going to go sell this beaver for $12 and be happy. And if that's what you want to do, God bless you. If you want to make money doing something like this, here's a real way to do it. And that market ain't going away anytime soon. All right. Let me get back to my little notes page. There's a few more things I want to cover. One is I want to cover two things I've got going because I'm getting questions about one of them, and one of them haven't been marketed yet, but they'll be on the internet next week. I've got a bait solution that's 16 ounces that you pour in a gallon of ground meat. It doesn't matter what it is. It's going to overtake that anyway. the meat is going to have a lot of the fat values and stuff. I've got extra amino acids and fats inside of this bait solution. It's got a pungent smell and a sweet smell to it. Works very well. It's super simple to use, guys. It costs $20. You go buy a gallon of bait. That's in most baits not going to have this good a solution into it anyway. At $10, even if you got cheap stuff, at $10 a piece, that's that 8 pints. That's $80. You can get it done for $20. You can use deer, you can use cow, you can use pork, you can use groundhog, you can use beaver, you can use bobcat, you can use whatever you want. All you do basically is grind the meat up or cut it real small, pour the bait solution in it. It is loaded with sodium benzonate. Now, if you want it before I get it on my store, you can buy it at F&T. They have it, and they've been selling it to the point where I've been scared to put it on my own store to keep up with them. But I think I'm getting ahead of that. You pour it in your bait. It's loaded with sodium benzonate. Most baits, that's going to be plenty of sodium benzonate too. Now, the thing about sodium benzonate is it takes 4 to 5 days for it to totally stop a lot of the bacteria action and the rotting action of a meat. So you put it in your bait. Every day you just go out there and pop the lid on it. If you got any gas buildup, it'll let it out. After 5 days, on the 6th day, if you go out and you pop that lid, it still has gas. You'll need to add more sodium benzonate. Half a cup's probably going to be more than enough. You could add salt. Sodium benzonate, I would recommend a little bit better. The reason that I can't guarantee that the bait solution is going to stop anything that you do is because of bacteria. Bacteria is a crazy, nasty little device in nature that is very different no matter what you do. It depends on the cleanliness of your grinder, what was on your knife, did the stuff hit the ground? I mean, there's no way for me as a bait maker to know that. And there's no way to put that much in solution in a 16-ounce thing where I can guarantee that no matter what it is, that it's going to preserve it. But then you just let that sit for 10 days, 2 weeks after that, and go use the bait. And you just saved yourself, what's that, $70? No, $60. You just saved yourself $60 by taking the time to grind something up and putting it in there. So it's a bait solution like that, and it'll work on everything from coyotes to fox, cats, coons, gray fox. Don't know if I know it'll work on coons really well. Don't think it'd work that well on mink and muskrats. But for the predator side of things, you can't beat it. The other product I have it coming out, which I haven't really told anybody about, is called Coon Whisper. This is a bait solution, basically, for dog-proof traps. Now, if you're using cat food or fish pellets, this is for you, and it's going to save you a ton of money over buying stuff. Fish pellets and cat food by itself will catch some coon, but it's not going to catch a whole lot of coon unless you've got a crap load of coon going over that trap every night. They just don't have the odor carrying capacity or the stuff in there to really drive an animal to want to work a bait. So what Coon Whisperer does, it comes in a spray bottle. If you're going to go use a gallon of fish pellets today to run your dog-proof traps, pour out a gallon of fish things into a bucket, spray it down, 5 or 6 sprays, swirl it around, 5 or 6 sprays, swirl it around, 5 or 6 sprays. I'm going to make the solution makes the fish pellets or the cat food smell like the bait solution, which is way more attractive than they are on their own. Now, let's say that you're going to, this is another money-saving thing for trappers. Say you're going to go run coon traps. For $20, you can buy Coon Whisperer, comes in a spray bottle. You can go buy a 40-pound bag of fish pellets at Tractor Supply or your co-op. They're not expensive. Now you got 40 pounds, which is several gallons of bait for basically probably about $40. So now you can go use it without, you know, worrying so much about what it costs. It's going to be a huge saver. The first one we're going to come out with is going to be a smoked fish. We're going to have some different flavors coming out that are very fruity. Some are sweet, different things like that. As I keep testing these things out on raccoon, we'll put out the ones that work and the ones that don't, we're not going to put out. but it'll give you a way that you can flavor. So hopefully down the road, if you're going out and you're putting two dog-proof traps on each coon, you're going to have a very cheap, highly effective bait by using this solution that you can put one odor in one the other. So if he's a fruit eater or a meat eater, you got him taken care of, but only thing you care about is getting that booger on a board. So that's going to be the coon whisper. Okay, we're going to finish up with talking a little bit about coyotes, because coyote season, there's early trapping season in a lot of the country, at least to us down here. They start October. Guys out west are starting, you know, into September in elevation. So many new trappers. And this is something that I'm seeing a lot, and a lot of people are getting confused about what's going on. So this is one of those things that eventually you will figure this out on your own anyway, but I'm going to try to give you a learning curve crunch here. You put a set in. We're going to say it's a dirt hole set. You put your favorite lure and bait. You got everything just the way you want it. You come by the next day, say you're 5 foot off of a road or something. On the other side of that road, you see coyote tracks. And it looks like it didn't slow down. What are you supposed to do as a trapper? I mean, isn't a dirt hole with the magic lure supposed to just draw him over and catch him? Let's say the same situation happens and you got a big old dropping about 4 foot from your trap where the coyote knew your set was there, didn't go in it, didn't work it, left you a column marker, which most trappers think they're being a smart aleck about. And that's not necessarily true. So they leave this dropping and they go about their business. I can tell you what I used to do, and I watched and talked to enough trappers and know what they do. Oh my goodness, he didn't like what I had. I've got to change something. Or he couldn't smell the lure. He couldn't smell the bait. Or something like that. Or he didn't like my dirt pattern. Or he didn't like the size of my hole. So you go over and you goof with a set. You add different lure. You add a more lure. You put urine. You put fish oil. You put anything like that on there. Well, then you come back and there's another piece of dropping. More tracks. Well, he didn't like that, so let's do this. Or one of the things on Facebook that I just answered last night is, you know, I set the trap, I saw tracks about 6 foot away. There was the tracks and they dropped a big load right there next to it. Next day, dropping's about 3 foot away. But he didn't work the set. What can I do? What am I doing wrong? Yada yada. Because that's the way that a trapper thinks. What am I doing wrong? You're not doing anything wrong. This is where we're going to have to go against our cultural, let's get it done right now, instantaneous way of thinking. That animal knows that set's there. There's no question he knows that set's there. He's nervous about that set. Could it be it's just new? It's a little too bold. He's never smelled anything like that that's coming out of the set. It's an older coyote that's been around. Or it's a younger coyote that wants to go over there, but he's just too nervous. So they kind of prance around. They get excited. They pee and they take a dump. Eventually they lose their nerve and they leave. In my opinion, the correct way to handle this situation is to do nothing. Check the set, make sure that the trap's not exposed, it's not washed out, you don't have an animal in it. Besides that, you go. Leave it alone. What happens with animals that are nervous and they know that set is there? Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, they will get a little closer and a little closer and a little closer until they work the set. Now, we set the trap and we want to catch the animal the next day. They don't work on the same time schedule, or they don't have the same understanding of days and time the way we do. If it takes them 5 or 6 days to work the set, there's nothing you're going to do to force that animal over there. You may get lucky and have another animal come by and get caught, but that one that's nervous probably is not. Leave it alone. You've got it on location. The animal knows it's there. He just hadn't worked up enough nerve to go work it yet. Now, where the only thing that you can do wrong at this point, in my opinion, is go screw with the set. go mess with a dirt pattern, go put molar bait in it, go add urine or fish oil or add feathers, or because when you do that, when that nervous animal comes back up to that set, you've just elevated the stimulus to that animal even higher. So you're going to get the same reaction again, but probably a little bit farther off this time. Or you may go down the road 20 feet and take a dump, or get excited and take a pee. Something like that. Because you've upped the stimulus on that animal, it's going to take longer for that particular animal to work that set. And guys, there's something that you're going to have to just understand. There are certain coyotes that are not going to get caught in the type of set, in the type of lure that you're using. And I don't care if it's my lure, or Dunlap's lure, or Norm's lure, or Mark June's lure, or Tim Caven's lure, Johnny Thorpe's lure, or Gorman's lure, anybody's lure. That particular coyote just may not be interested at all in what you're doing. That's just life. You can't force that animal to go do something. Now, another thing that I could tell from this email is he went, this particular trapper, and I'm not picking on him, went across the street, because I've done it myself, put in a urine post set, thinking that if the animal is nervous, he's going to be nervous at the dirt hole, and he's going to run over and pee on the urine post set. That's not near what it's marketed as. Now you've pinned him down on two sides with two different types of stimulus. And at a different urine at a set like that is a stimulus. If you just got to do something, and the younger you are, the harder this is just let stuff go. But if you're younger and you got to do something, and it's on a road or a trail or a tree line or something like that, go down a couple hundred yards and put a totally different type set in with a totally different type lure and bait. That way he's out of his nervous zone and he comes across something else, because the next set may not make him nervous for whatever reason. And he walks over and he gets caught. But that micro area around that set, say, 10, 15 feet, I really wouldn't do anything at all. I would even, if we had a lot of rain, I'd be very reluctant to re-lure this set at all. That animal knows where it's at. And trust me, he's going to smell it even if it's been under 6 inches of water. When that water goes down, there's still going to be residue inside of there. And that animal smells so good, he's going to know it's there. And that may be the time that he gets caught, because now it looks old, smells older. There hadn't been anything going on. You don't have the disco lights, in the roof of your dirt hole trying to get his attention. And he goes over and he gets caught. But if you run over there as soon as you get a bunch of rain and you throw another hot dose of something in there, you're back to ground zero all over again. I'm not going to say it never works. And I would say most of the time it's a different animal that gets caught. And there's certain animals that are just nervous. You've met people, they're nervous. They're scared of everything. You've also met people that ain't afraid of nothing. They would walk right in the middle of a grinder with a screwdriver that's running because they know they can do it. Or they'll run off in battle deadhead without even thinking about it. There's just people like that. And there's people that are scared of their own shadow. They're scared they're sick of this, or they're going to die of that. And they're going to act funny. The brave one's the easy one to get. The nervous one is not always that way. Now, if I'm going back to the failure is not an option type thing in a control business, when I see that repeatedly, that's when I go heavy into blind sets that are very heavily blended in. And then if it's showy shows that they're showing this reaction to, I go to very subtle flat sets. And most of the time, it seems like the blind set somewhere down the trail picks up the animals that I probably wouldn't have got in the more showy sets, because they don't know they're getting caught till it's too late. So it's just something to think about. And as you're going out trapping, if you're putting your traps in the right spot and you see coyotes get close to it, you see it in the snow, which makes it even worse, it seems like that's when you don't know when you should do something, but that's when you should do nothing. Well, that's the end of the show this week, and I will talk to y'all next week, and y'all have a happy Halloween and a great trapping season.